Let's get started. Welcome back to Two Beers In. Hopefully you were this last week. Chef Allen really had things rolling. I don't think I've laughed that hard in a while. So, I mean, it was definitely a nice one down memory lane. But welcome back. This should be episode 61. And I say should be because sometimes my counting's a little off and things happen. But I believe we're on 61, which is also mind-blowing. That we're well past a year now, and people still keep listening.
Still somebody out there.
Yeah, still somebody out there. In fact, there's people, like we said a couple weeks ago, in many different countries even.
Yeah.
I'd almost love to find somebody in the other countries that listen. We've got Germany, United Kingdom.
Australia,
New Zealand. I mean, I'd love to find somebody. Maybe we could do like a live one with somebody from one of those countries, and I think that could be pretty cool. Or not live per se, but live with them and then publish it after. It could just be cool to learn who these people are and, you know, maybe, who knows, maybe other people might
like it. Can you imagine what we would sound like with subtitles?
I would love to listen to us with, I don't know if you can listen with subtitles. You'd have to watch it with subtitles.
Spotify, I think you can.
Can you?
Yeah, I was going to say the lyrics tab.
Okay, the lyrics tab. Yeah, all right.
Voiceover our voices.
Oh, I would love to hear us voiceover. Yes, yes. That would be fantastic. But we digress. Let's get back on track here. We have a local legend in the house this week. We were just talking beforehand how in all my time in Bloomington Normal, which is quickly approaching 25 years, I've never known somebody to be named like
Unanimously
in this format, and we have the infamous Pizza Dave with us today, so we'll get into more of that, and we'll let him introduce himself, and I'm sure we can get deeper into the mythos, which is Pizza Dave. But as always, I am Jeff from Keg Grove.
I'm Tyler from Keg Grove.
And our guest this week?
Pizza Dave.
Pizza Dave! There it is! You just heard the voice. It's true. So I think, Dave, we got to start there.
All right.
We got to start with the mythos of Pizza Dave. Who is Pizza Dave? What makes Pizza Dave Pizza Dave?
Pizza Dave is a guy who delivered pizza for about 22 years in his hometown and enjoyed craft beer. And one day when he couldn't get Casual Jesus at Hy-Vee anymore, had to go see what this White Oak place is all about. And there was the Batman, Nick Berkey.
Yep.
Was a bartender at the time. And I had just gotten done doing a couple works during the holiday season for prep for them in the morning at Fort Jesse. So he joked, and they were just like, "Hey, man, you want to trade pizza for beers?" And I was just like, "Yeah."
Yeah, that's a done deal, right?
Yeah.
Especially,
absolutely.
I'm sure you had a pizza, or a discount at the time, too. You know what I mean? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So next day I showed up, I brought in two pizzas, and all of a sudden, you know, 6-7 beers later, no tab, I'm just like, all right, see you next weekend.
Right.
And so on and so forth, kept going on, started making just some oddball pizzas off the menu, Papa John's items, and everybody just loved it.
I will say I never cried when I was either at White Oak or Brugola or here, and Pizza Dave mythologically was here and there was pizza to eat. I mean, I wish there was a tab I could have thrown into it sometimes, but you know what I mean? It was always fantastic. But I remember always looking over my shoulder, where is this Pizza Dave?
Right.
Never to be seen.
The best is always other patrons of brewers would be like, can we give you money for the pizza? And I'm just like, you can, but like, just tip your bartender, like, it'll right. be fine.
And that's I think a thing of any service industry. Like, you hit it on the head there. Like, the establishment themselves was taking care of you, and you hit the nail on the head. Anytime you're being taken care of in an establishment, just take care of your bartender or your server. They're the ones that are doing the work. You know what I mean? Just always. Like, anytime I buy a beer for somebody or anything, that's all I say. It's just take care of the people working. You know what I mean? It's a tip industry.
Yeah.
And gratuity-based, and they do rely on that gratuity. There's no doubt about
that. Very heavily.
Yeah. And I mean, yeah, that's really all I got to say about that. I'm pulling Forrest Gump on that one. All right, so that extended for quite a while, like you said, but you're in a new gig now.
Yeah, now I'm a beer buyer at a local liquor retailer.
Yep. In the industry, we'll say, yes. Yeah. So buying beer compared to making pizza, what's the... I can only imagine that's better.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the quick way to say it. It's better. There's a couple things that I miss about being in the pizza biz.
I got you. My
weight doesn't miss a lot of those things.
Right, amen. But now, I see if you're in the brewing industry, I'd tell you that does not help your weight either.
Oh, no.
Right.
I've hit a dead wall with weight loss, and it's because I'm at the point where just like I have to quit drinking beer. Or I have to start going to the gym 5 days a week. Like, neither of those things are things that I'm really into.
Yeah, I don't know about you, but I'm going gym first, and then we'll see what happens, right? I've also dabbled a little lighter beer. This weekend, I was out on a nice little run, and there's quite a few Busch Lights that occurred that day. And it needed to happen. Like, you can't always drink heavy craft beers.
Yeah.
Like, you brought a fantastic one we're drinking right now.
Oh, yeah.
Amazing flavor from Perennial, I believe, correct? Yep. And it's just got so much flavor to it, and it's fantastic. But it is not something that I could go and say, oh, I'm going to drink this for a whole day of day drinking. No, that would not work.
No, I don't even think I could do that whole bottle by myself and be okay.
So isn't that the truth about beer? Like, yeah. So I think some people don't even notice that, whether they're serving 16s or, in this case, champagne bottles similar to 22. You look at those and you think, well, it's just beer, but it's not. There are so many more complexities to beer, and it's not necessarily a focus of ours here at Keg Grove to get into the depths of some of those beers. We really look at the approachable factor and the, well, I mean, mass produced, right? We're mass producing a product, and we don't focus as much on those fancier beers, I'll say, but I mean, they are out there and they're amazing.
Oh, yeah.
There are some, I mean, like, this beer here doesn't taste like beer at all. It doesn't taste like wine either. Right. Yeah. It's almost like a dessert.
Yeah.
It's like I could only imagine this over some ice cream.
Right.
Oh.
What I like to call is delightfully decadent beers.
Delightfully decadent. Yeah. The double D. All right. Dave likes the double D's. We got that in there. We got that going on now. All right.
Yeah, there's also been a big move with a lot of these breweries where instead of doing like wine bottles, you're doing half bottles or, you know, even bombers still.
Yeah, yeah.
They'll do like 2-pack pints or they'll do half acre even. I just got a 2-pack of 12 ounces from them. Their Vim Barrel Aged Baltic Porter.
Okay.
It's like people that make the stuff now are starting to realize that you don't really want to do a full bottle because no one's going to sit there in their right mind and down an entire bottle if they want to maintain their sanity.
Yeah, no kidding. And if anybody heard a door squeaking, our salesman Corey just walked in the house. So if he decides to chime in at all, we'll allow it today. But yeah, no, that's actually an interesting trend, Dave, because I think it's necessary. I mean, Tyler, you and I used to get into some crazy beers, especially when we went up to the different breweries up in Chicago, or we went attacking Benny's or Friar Tuck or Hy-Vee, and some of those beers are just, they're not a one person. Well, immediately in my head, I think of Dogfish Head 120. I've had so many of those bottles, they're all 12 ounces. I've never drank one myself.
Remember when it was on draft out in Buffalo?
Oh, what? Yeah. We were out in Buffalo and a bar had it on draft. And my cousin ordered a full draft.
Jesus.
And it took three of us to finish it.
Yeah. But,
I mean, it's too complex, too high in alcohol. Too. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's not. It's one to be loved and sipped on, not one to be slugged away.
My favorite is people that are like, you're charging $9 for this 12-ounce bottle. Just, like, buy it, try it, and tell me that that's not a fair price.
Right, No, that's a good point. So what are some of the... Yeah, I mean, so on that note, what are some of the things that you see? You're seeing way more than us. I mean, as far as, like, I'm sure there's trends in 12-ounce versus 16-ounce, mm-hmm. 4-packs versus 6-packs there. I'm sure there's trends in flavors. I know recently we were up in Chicago and we stopped by a couple breweries. That day was Noon Whistle and Solemn Oath. We had a meeting up there and had a great conversation with the individual working at Solemn Oath, and he was asking if down here it's like up in Chicago, and he said we're basically in the lager wars up there. Everybody's trying to out-lager everybody else. Yeah. And I'm like, no, not really. There's only a handful of us down here, and it's just... We brew. So what I love is we brew for the community, I feel, down here.
Yeah, and you all have your niches.
We do, 100%. And I feel it's very community-focused rather than trend-focused. I mean, do we all dabble here and there? Sure, but... I mean, for the most part, we just want to make what people want to drink, right? Yeah. You know what I mean? But yeah, I'll let you speak towards it a little more.
Yeah, so there's definitely... People are moving away from the 12-ounce containers to the 16-ounce containers when we're talking about more standard beers like your IPAs, lagers, pilsners, basic stouts, milds. 12 ounces are moving more towards like specialty, big barrel-aged beers, high ABV beers... or they'll even go from doing a pint 4-pack to doing a pint 2-pack for those beers. And over the last 2 months, actually, the 6-pack pints are coming in, man.
Really?
Firestone Walker, we've got FML as 6-pack pints. We've got Arrogant Bastard as 6-pack pints. War Pigs is down here now with 6-pack pint lagers.
I could see that. I could see a place for a lot of beers in 6-pack pints.
Yeah.
I can think of one off the top of my head.
Yeah, I can think of a couple. Two or three flagships in town. You know,
right, yeah. I mean,
Holy Jeans, 6-pack pints. The amount of people I see walking out the door with cases of Holy Jeans.
Right.
Holla at you, same thing.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
The Still did a really smart move, and 5 Ales and 12-pack, 12 ounces.
Oh,
now.
Sweet.
Those are doing real well. Like, people, I think, breweries in general... need to, I don't want to say focus on their flagships, but maybe reformat their flagships. Uh-huh. Like, case in point, Phase 3, like, give me a Pixel Density 6-pack.
Right.
Like that, the amount of people that come in and buy, like,
four packs
of Pixel Density, like, just give us a 6-pack.
And, I mean, and when you say that, I mean, that's even a cost benefit on a brewery side. It's going to be less expensive for us to buy one 6-pack pack deck.
Yeah.
Than it is to do 1.5 4-pack backpacks. I mean, that's just a...
Yeah.
I mean, there's supply things there, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then there's also other breweries who, like, they're hanging on to 12s, but they're still doing 16s, too. Like, Noon Whistle, for example.
Yeah, yeah.
They've basically got a split where their IPAs, for the most part, are pints, but everything else, for the most part, is 12-ounce 6-packs.
Okay. And I respect that. I mean, speaking for us, at least... I am not changing that canyon line. There are a lot of settings. And you were here early on when we had a really bad day.
Yeah.
And we don't have days like that, thank goodness.
Good.
However, I'm not changing those settings. I mean, I'd be looking at Tyler, hey, that's got to be changed. And I'm pretty sure he'll tell me some four-letter words.
Start with nope.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's 4 letters.
No four-letter word in way. I'm thinking, yes.
Uh-huh.
No, it's and that's it. And I mean, obviously, around town here, we're small operations. I mean, we only have 2, 3, 4 people working. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Some of those bigger breweries, though, I mean, they have an actual canyon line team. And, you know, like,
yeah.
You go over to Still, I mean, they got it going on. They got departments and people. And then, you know what I mean? They can make those switches.
Right.
They're trained. I mean, that's their job, right?
Still is also a different beast. Like, they're at the contract scale. Like, they are pumping out hundreds of thousands of gallons of liquid a month.
They are.
And I don't think a lot of people realize how big Distill actually is.
No, or how much they pump out. No, yeah, I don't think they do. Or even the new tanks they have. I mean, I would say, especially now that, well, I shouldn't say COVID's over, but things have relaxed. If you can get on a tour over at Distill, it's not the Distill you remember pre-COVID. Yeah. It's they have some monstrous tanks, and the whole team over there does a phenomenal job. So, I guess this is a plug for Distill. You know, support local beer, and You know,
the smartest thing Distill did when they built that new brew house was making it future proof and making it so easy to get new equipment in there to upgrade.
Yeah.
Like that, yeah. Whoever had that idea, like, I hope they're still there and making a lot of money.
Well, or they paid somebody to make that decision, which is also the greatest choice ever. Yes.
My first time walking in there with you guys, and I looked up, I'm like, oh my God. Like,
yes.
I looked at that point, I was one of the tanks here, and I'm like, that's a lot of stuff here. That's a big tank.
So the real saddening part is when you find a 7-barrel tank there, you just kind of hang your head low, and you kind of leave thinking, well, that's what I'm going home to.
But at the same time, you also got to think, what amazing product are they going to put in that tank?
Oh, you're not wrong. Yes. So for them, yes, the smaller the tank means it's going to be something really focused, high-end, amazing, test-worthy, if you will, yes.
Like, I'm not going to say it, but there's a seasonal barrel age release. Like, I imagine test batches for that kind of
I would imagine that, too, yes. Yeah. I would agree. Well, we saw one at Noon Whistle. Remember, we were looking, trying to figure out how big all the tanks were, and finally we stumbled upon a 7, and we both, like, dropped our heads. This beat-up little tank. Oh, that's our baby. Yeah.
That cute little fellow over there in the corner by itself.
And it's right next to all their barrels, so you know what they're doing. I mean, the barrels are going into the 7, and then that makes sense. That's what you do, right? I mean, there's nothing bad about that.
Just think about it like this. Like, what if they're doing cuvées? What if they're...
What if they
take 2 7s, and then they put them like a 20?
Valid. Yes, I'll give you that.
Not that I think Dune Whistle's done a cuvée before.
Yeah, I couldn't tell you. It was impressive, though, being there. And I know that's their second location, and clearly their production facility. I mean, amazing. And
yeah. I mean, they got a lot of painted cans.
Yes, man. Yes. It's amazing. But, that's there. We're here. Tell us that. So, in the Bloomington beer buyer world, what do you see? Not necessarily what's hot or what's not, or maybe it is what's hot, what's not, or maybe it's what surprises you the
most.
Like,
from the consumer end of things?
Either way you want to talk. You're the expert. We're the listeners.
I think it's funky how many customers have a love for very specific beers that are really common on the West Coast and very difficult for us to get here and refuse to try anything else. They'll come in and they'll ask for Mango Cart, for example. And I'm like, no, we don't have Mango Cart. It's really hard for us to get, especially south of I-80 in Illinois, because when everything does come into Illinois, it usually goes to Chicago first.
Right.
And then it gets picked apart by their distributors before making it to my distributors. And then I try to push them towards, well, here's Holy Jeans. It's locally made. It's really good. As long as you like blueberry, it's basically the similar beer with blueberry instead of mango, which is why I want you guys to can Jorts, by the way. Just leave money on the table, Jeff.
That is not off the table. It's just there's some small things we have to figure out first. Yes.
But yeah, like they'll ask for a specific beer, and then instead of being open to recommendations, they'll just nope, and then they'll go get their wine and leave.
How much of that do you think is like it's what they want versus it's what they read? Because West Coast is very prominent in the beer industry, you know what I mean? And as is other areas, but I mean, if you're going to read beer literature, it's not going to direct you to local beer.
No.
Even Chicago's kind of left out, and it's one of the biggest brewing areas in the country.
Yeah. Well, I want to say I'm brushing up on my BJCP guidelines.
I got you.
And stuff, but I want to say Revolution is actually noted in the BJCP guide right now.
Oh, for excellent. Barley wine. So that's a first step. They should have been there a long time ago.
Yeah.
I mean, they put out some amazing things.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's taken a while, and they've grown fast. But I mean, I just feel like anytime I see some, so like, I'll do a lot of research into styles when I'm trying to brew, or not when I'm trying to brew, but when I'm trying to write a recipe for something, or Todd and I have an idea, you know, I'm going to read a lot. Everything I find is based on a West Coast.
Right.
I mean, it's somebody on the West Coast. You may find the occasional East, but
often...
Colorado,
they still exist.
Colorado, still but I consider Colorado West still.
All right.
You know what I mean? Because there is a lot out of Colorado. It's just... I'll take some. Sure, why not? I just find it really interesting.
Twist your arm.
Yeah, twist my arm. I just find it really interesting that you said that, because I'd be really curious to find out how much of that is, because that's what, I don't want to say the media's fed us, that's not necessarily my message, but we all read things, and especially even as homebrewers, we all, there are certain things you're trying to mimic, if you will, and you don't want to accept others. Like, no, that's not good enough. Right. I want this elusive white reindeer. You know what I mean? Like,
well, it's like when major domestic fans get upset because they're like, what do you mean you don't have Miller Genuine Draft in bottles? And I'm just like, listen, man, we got cans for days, or you can get another major domestic in a bottle. Like, it's just brand loyalty, I think, is a lot of it. Marketing, and that they really had a jump start on us in the Midwest just because, you know, legislation. You guys in White Oak and Distill and Little Beaver weren't able to do what they were able to do until people like Potts and, you know, lobbying firms changed the laws in Illinois.
No, so absolutely. They couldn't do stuff. Yeah.
Whereas California, it's just like, are you doing anything that's going to blatantly harm anyone? No?
Right.
Okay, go ahead, do it.
Yeah, especially in the Seattle and Washington, Oregon area. I mean, and that's where all the hops are. Once you're up there, I mean, it's just a curious thing, and I don't know anything there. I'm just, you know, kind of just conjecturing, if you will. That's a big word, Tyler. I'm conjecturing.
I liked that question, too. I never thought about that, of the that people are coming in asking for something because they've read about it, and like, as everyone here knows, I'm a big bourbon guy.
You are.
If you are, you see, probably have a plant inside where somebody comes in like, do you have Blanton's? Do you have Weller? Do you have these different things? And they get told no, they leave.
Yes, correct.
It's like on the liquor side of things, like there's so much better brown water. Well, I don't want to say better, but there's so much equal quality brown water that just doesn't have the lineage or the name. And people, because they can't get that name, they turn their head and walk away. Like even here in Illinois, again, we have a lot of really good distilleries in Illinois.
Yeah.
Like, we've got one in DeKalb. I feel bad because I can never remember the name. I want to say it's like J.K. Wellers or something like that, or J.W., I don't know. But they do a really good rye, if you like a nice $60 rye. And, you know, just Midwest and large, and even breweries are now making spirits like Maplewood.
They are, a lot of them.
Dude, they've got a canned cocktail called Palmer Square. If you like an Arnold Palmer, this is an Arnold Palmer made with gin, and it's phenomenal.
That's intriguing. And I'll say, I mean, it makes sense for a brewery to make alcohol.
Yeah.
I mean, the licensing is a bit much, but...
You really just got to buy one more blunt, kind of really.
Well, that's it. For equipment-wise, it's fine, but the licensing is the problem. But that's just it. A lot of people don't realize is beer is half the process.
Yeah.
I mean, it really is. It's just stopping short with more effort.
Distilleries have a line that just says beer.
Yes. Now, if you drank their beer, you may not be happy.
Well,
but that's
the
thing.
But you might enjoy it.
Well, right. You'd be happy.
Yeah, you'll be happy.
Yes. But in a lot of people just don't understand all those steps involved in that fermentation process and then the distillation processes.
Yeah.
And I mean, they're going for a final product that's different than the product we're going for. So
yeah, absolutely.
There's total differences there, 100%. So trend-wise right now, what's hot?
Well, trend-wise right now, weather's getting better, Kolsch's are in, customers that I see that used to not ask for lighter beers are now asking for Kolsch's, which I'm a fan of. I like Kolsch. Old McLean's Best, is that coming back this year?
That's a great question. We should get with our boys and see where we're at.
Yeah.
I think both of last year's collabs went over pretty well, so... I could see a repeat happening.
I mean, we just had Primo Quality and that Good Good, so it's time for you guys to hook up with
you. We can make something happen.
And maybe go over there and help them break in the build out they're doing.
Right, yes. Yeah, that'd be an excellent way to do that, 100%. But yeah, no, we'll see. I know our Francis just ran out on draft. We have some cans available. Right, yeah. And very limited at that.
Glad I stocked up on that.
Right, yeah, it's just, I mean, but that's how it goes, right? I mean, it's that, I just said, I think even on a couple other podcasts ago, it was, right now, it's all light beer, fruit beer, and hops.
Yep.
That's all, there's no need to brew anything. I mean, well, we keep a dark beer on, so we do, but you know what I mean? But everything else is, light and easy.
Customer interest wise, puree beers are hot, and I have a love hate relationship with puree beers because I love them when they're done well.
Mm-hmm.
I hate them when they're done poorly. Phase 3 does some amazing work with puree. They've got a custom adjunct tank. If you guys get a chance to go up to Lake Zurich and tour that,
yeah,
get back there. Hit up Evan if you need his contact info. Let me know. Their facility is on par with Distill. It's just not as pretty as Distill because it's a warehouse block.
Okay, I got you.
But production side, like, they got it going on, man.
Cool.
And Energy City, they were doing some really cool stuff. They're still doing some cool stuff, but it's kind of interesting because they were at, I'm not going to name drop because I don't want to throw any shade, but there was a Chicagoland brewery that was contracting for people. They had a pasteurization line that was a little too aggressive and scorching cans. So Energy City moved to Octopi, and now it's like, great, your liquid was already fantastic, and now that it's at one of the best contracts in the country,
right.
It's going to be even better.
Yeah.
But people want those big, fruity puree beers, especially as the weather is getting warmer.
Yeah.
I just think it's funny that most of them are Berliners, other than like the random milkshake IPAs. You don't really see many other pureed style beers, whereas I'm somebody who would be like, give me a pureed wheat beer without sourdough. Like,
right.
Give me Holy Jeans with blueberry puree.
Well, I mean, yeah, like, so, yeah, all right, I got you there. Yeah.
I know that causes problems with canning for you.
Well, not necessarily. There is the whole exploding can issue, yes. But it also gives you a different flavor. So that's always the other thing. So often the real fruit flavor is different from the flavor we associate with the fruit. And that's where things get kind of goofy, for lack of a better term.
Yeah.
Because we have obviously quite a few fruit wheats. And, you know, you got to be careful where and how and why. And some we got lucky the first time. Some we had to rescue. I mean, we've got cotton dress pants coming out soon. It's a peach wheat. And the first time we did it, the first idea did not work at all.
That was a lot of peach.
And then we actually put the current peach we use on top of the other peach. So it was like an uber peach, but all you tasted was the new peach. So it worked. But you got to find it. It's just not always that easy, right?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Like watermelon.
Yeah, watermelon's a tough one.
And if it was easy, would it be fun? And if it was, would it still be good?
Valid, insightful questions.
Yeah.
Well done.
The old space rate quote, you know, we don't choose to do things because they're easy. We choose to do them because they're hard.
I like that. That's well done. Well done.
I'll have to remember that when I'm growing beers in my life.
There you go. Like late night golf cart ride.
That's such a good beer.
Divergent Travels.
Yeah.
And King Corn.
King Corn is a pain. Oh,
so much corn, the corn gets in the way, and the corn makes you cranky. Yeah.
So I've heard.
Yeah, but it's coming back, so it's soon. Soon.
Yeah. But yeah, it's another thing, man. Going into summer, talked about lighter beers. Customers are looking for lighter beers. But at the same time, like, you need that strong beer to either kickstart your day or night to finish your day or night. And that's where King of Corn would come in. I found a lot of people that are looking for beers out of season. Like, we had a lot of people that were looking for My Box at Christmas.
Really?
I had a person 2 days ago, end of April, looking for Martin.
Oh,
and I'm like, we, thanks to my robust import section, we have a Martin year round.
Right.
But it's one of those, like, they were coming in and name dropping, like, some Ohio breweries, and I'm just like, we don't have a distributor for them anyway.
Right.
And B, if we had their Martin, it would be on the shelf to go back to them.
Yeah. It's a little old.
A little late for that.
Yeah.
I got a little sad when Pollyanna's Fruhoff, my favorite Illinois Martin of the year for 2021. we had to send 2 4-packs of that out of code.
Nobody likes out of code beer.
Right. But I will say there are a lot of out of code.
Long before that.
What's up?
So maybe you could have just bought them and taken them home before.
I mean, I've got a beer budget I've got to adhere to. You know? I have over, last time I counted, I have over 1,000 unique beers. And, you know, I wanted to have at least a third of them. I'm not going to because that's a lot of money.
Yeah. And he's a new home buyer. I mean, you know, you can't be upset in the atmosphere here. The man's on a budget.
Plus, I have random gift beers to go through, like this guy right here.
Yes.
Senor Rhino.
I'm rather excited for anything with a gold top like right? that. You know, I mean, it's just a wax dip, but
yeah.
I don't
care.
It's
a good looking wax dip.
I mean, wax dip.
Took some time on dipping that thing.
So wax dips, you and I have talked about a lot, Tyler. I mean, they're sexy. A nice wax dip bottle is a sexy bottle.
When they're done right.
When they're done right. When they're not as sexy.
When they curl up.
Yeah.
Did you see Triptych's batch 969?
I don't think I did.
12 ounce barley wine.
Yeah.
Pink wax. That was sexy. All
right. All right.
The pink wax is cool.
Yeah.
I like pink. All right. Pantalones could be pink. Just got to brew it. Man, we got a lot of aspirations for that base beer. We were just talking about that today. Just trying to figure out like different things, maybe canning it, you know, different items, and then we're like, well, that's just going to be more and more difficult, right? That's how it
well,
goes.
Hopefully, it just means it'll be more and more delicious.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, it means more and more manpower too, and that's where things start getting trickier, right? You know. That's when it's like, Corey, you got any free time? Because we need you to help on this side, too.
No, I don't. We're pissed. I'll find it, though.
Well, that is what I do to you, Tyler, yes. I'm always telling you, so we need to do this. Yes. We don't have a choice. We need to do this. And then you'll look at me and go, so I'm going to just pull time out of my asshole? Yes, preferably.
Hey, can you teach me how to do that? It's a handy skill.
Right? I forgot this is one of those 8-day weeks.
It is. The 8-day weeks are different. It's got fun day. Fun day. There's a fun day on top of all the other days.
Yeah. And then the next week is a 4-day week because of the fun day.
Well, not necessarily, but yes.
Isn't that much fun?
We love fun days. All right, so what is this one, Dave?
This was a gift from a customer from before my time, and when we split all the beers, this is one of the ones that I ended up with in my box to take home. I'm unfamiliar with the brewery and don't remember the name off the top of my head, so let me finish pouring here real quick.
All right.
But it's Senor Rhino. I brought it out because that and Abraxas both sounded Mexican coffee or hot chocolate inspired.
I like that. And we are recording the week of Cinco de Mayo, so that works out wonderfully.
And so this is from Ale Song Brewing and Blending, Senor Rhino. It's an imperial stout aged in bourbon and tequila barrels with cinnamon, cacao, vanilla, and ancho chilies.
I think I smell all of that.
Yeah.
There's a lot.
Eugene,
I definitely have the bourbon.
Oregon.
And I definitely have the cinnamon.
It's not as old as I thought. This was bottled 2020.
All right. Aged to perfection. Perfect. So if everybody's trending towards lighter beers right now, where do you think the trend is going for the summer season?
As a retailer, I hope so.
All right.
For a couple of different reasons. A, the more light beers I have on my shelf, the more options I can give to customers, the more I get to drink. The more I have available to me to acquire and drink.
I understand.
And also, I mean, I love big beers. I love barrel-aged beers. I also love big saisons, as you know. I've been around a lot of saisons, which is another delightful summer beer. But people are looking at the session now, like Founders with All Day IPA, and I would say Distill with Soundboard, but rest in peace that for distribution, I guess. And Lagunitas Daytime, like, people eat that shit up.
Okay.
Like, the session beer is where it's at for warm weather now.
Well,
like,
I don't know if this is a good time to say it or not, but we should be clear. By the time this comes out, we should be releasing our light beer as well.
Ooh.
We have a light sessionable beer. We don't know anything else about it yet. It hasn't been brewed, but it should just be a solid American lighter style ale. Yeah. We're pretty excited about it. We'll see what happens. If you don't ever see it, it was an epic failure.
Well, I'd rather not see an epic failure than be like, come on, guys.
Right.
Although I will say, for all of the Keg Grove beers and beverages I've had, the only one that's disappointed me was the dill pickle. And honestly, you would have branded that as a Parmesan garlic breadstick seltzer, I'd be in.
Right. So that beer was a leap of faith.
All right.
We went in a totally different direction, and the only regrets I have is how long it took to clean out the line.
Ooh, yeah, I heard about that.
Yeah. So that took some time. But aside from that, it had enough followers to sell it.
That's good. And I mean, it does have some good beer tails that used it.
Yes. There were some good uses. And that's it. I actually, the only regret I have personally is I wanted to take a couple crawlers away. And, like, save them, use them for cooking.
Ooh.
To marinate meat and do some different things.
Dude, put that in a bread?
Yeah, go with the
breadstick thing, you know.
I didn't use that
in a Bloody Mary.
We did that.
I heard from multiple people it was really good that way, but I never actually made it happen.
Yeah, the Bloody was good. Todd's dad loved that.
That's who told me about it.
Yeah, there you go. Perfect. Yeah, he had his own Bloody Mary mix here. He'd come up here and mix himself one all the time. But yeah, that was all right. It was, but yeah, that one, once in a while you take a leap of faith. And that was a big leap. And it needed a lot of faith.
I mean, at least it wasn't to the point where you had to dump it.
No. It did. We were good. It's just, Poor Brothers in Champagne had it.
Really? Yeah.
And it sold really well there.
Yeah, so
they also had the same comments on the line. They
really liked it.
Huh.
Yeah. Slight difficulty, but
get the line clear of it again.
Yeah. Oh, no. Beer's down.
On the laptop.
Oh, that's all right. We're all good. Things happen. We trip over cords once in a while here.
No, but they had, at Poor Bros, they had a group of people that came in all the time that loved that beer and
just
loved drinking it. Just straight. They just loved the beer.
100%. 100%.
That's good.
Yeah, I talk to people here that get a little taster of it and then go immediately get a pint glass of it. And in my mind, I'm like, you're a... It was brave soul.
It was very garlic.
Yeah.
A lot of garlic.
They're a brave soul, or they just know that they like garlic and dill.
Everyone has different palates. That's what's also awesome.
The same cat that doesn't throw the pickle jar away when there's no pickles left. He just drinks the juice.
See, the pickle juice is great to save to do Jameson pickleback shots.
Oh, yeah. Or, you know, you can always pickle other things in it.
I mean, you could do that too. Yeah.
I'm the kind of guy where, like, when the pickle jar gets low, I just like throw some baby carrots in there to like bulk it up, and then just put some pickled carrots later on.
I've never done it. The last time we had a jar of pickles that all was left was the juice, we took it into our bar that we had drank out of pickle juice from doing too many pickleback shots. So we're like, here's a refill.
It was literally just Jameson and pickle juice.
It's a shot of Jameson and a shot of pickle juice. So you do the shot of Jameson, you get the pickle juice, and it just wipes your palate clear.
Come on.
Yeah, any burn. I mean, I've heard people doing it with tequila, all kinds of stuff. But
I mean, that kind of makes sense. The old food service thing is, if you burn yourself with fryer grease, just throw your hands in the pickle jar. Like,
it's a fix-all for everything.
Just all around.
Be wary of pickle buckets, folks.
Oh, God.
Well, I didn't even know about that now.
Yeah, I remember those were Papa John's. We would do pepperoncini steak. It's just spicy brine.
Yeah.
It'll still reduce blistering and whatnot. It'll burn like a bitch, but, you know.
Yeah, God, that's really going to hurt.
Yeah, I can't feel good.
But you know what? You won't have a blister the next day. So
I don't know which one would be worse.
Yeah.
Closer, your skin feeling like it's peeling off.
I mean, I don't know, man. Either way, just like working with my hands, I can't have a blister on my hand.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah.
Yeah. I'd rather just be insanely uncomfortable for a couple of minutes.
Yeah, it's either your skin feels like it's blistering and peeling off, or you actually don't do that, and then the next day your skin is blistering and peeling off.
Yeah.
Blistering.
Yeah.
Talking about uses for pickle juice. Yeah.
Huh.
Then, so in the food industry, catch you up, if you got a burn, the big gag was throw whatever you got burned in the pickle bucket, because the brine will
gotcha.
Reduce blistering and all that. And then at the pizza place, we used to do it with pepper and chili juice, because that's just brine.
Huh.
It would burn you like crazy, but you wouldn't have a blister, so, you know, there you go.
That's fair.
Yeah.
I'm hoping the pepper chilies weren't still in that thing, but...
you know, it really depends who had to do it. I would always just pour it on myself, and by that I mean I think I would burn myself there like 3 times, because that was like the last decade of my pizza career. I had a decade before that of not learning how to not burn myself in a pizza shop.
This is kind of like sounding like the jellyfish peeing on the jellyfish stand. Yeah, right. You know what I mean?
Or like people do that for athletes' foot, and I'm like, I don't think that's what you want to do.
Peeing on a foot for athlete's foot?
Yeah.
That doesn't sound like a good idea.
Nope.
No.
But
that
sounds
like the thing you shouldn't do.
Yeah, Moises Alou, back when he played for the Cubs, he came out saying that he peed on his hands. Yeah, the cows' hands.
You ever notice everybody on that team did not shake hands with him?
I did not, but yeah. I mean, looking at him.
Everyone is always like,
we'll do bows.
Yeah. There's no handshaking.
No handshaking with Moises. Because he was Moises from peeing on himself. That is interesting. Very, very interesting. So where do you think the trend's going to take us overall for 2022? I know we were talking beforehand how up in Chicago there's a lot of talk of lagers being like the thing right now.
Yeah.
I'm kind of curious to get your take, as you experience a hell of a lot more than I do. We just make it. We don't.
Well, I would say lagers have always been the thing. I mean, lagers and pils. Like, look at major domestics. Like, there's a reason why, you know, Coors got so big. There's a reason why Yingling is getting so big.
Yeah.
There's a reason why major domestics became what they became.
Yeah.
Like, people... like what a lot of us jokingly call beer-flavored beer.
Yeah.
Like, shout out to Montucky Cold Snacks. Like,
yeah.
A lot of people talk shit, but if you're looking for a beer-flavored beer...
Montucky's like, good. I have no problem. I may or may not have had one this weekend.
Yeah.
And by may or may not, that means I did. But, you know, that's another side note there.
I'm just a little pampered because, you know, here in town, White Oak, if I want a beer-flavored beer, like, I'll grab a Hala.
Right.
That was actually, when I got my kegerator going in my house, that was the first keg I had, was a keg of Hala.
Perfect.
But yeah, lagers, I don't see them being, like, a big market focus to the point where that's all people are buying, but I definitely do see more and more breweries are bringing lagers on, and breweries that already consistently made lagers, like Pipeworks, are now having 2 or 3 lagers available for me to order at one time.
Gotcha.
I also see people exploring the world through craft breweries and their lagers. Like, we had Czech lagers, German lagers. There was a Spanish lager that I saw on a shelf from a San Francisco brewery.
Really?
I don't remember the name of it.
I would like to try a Spanish lager.
Spanish lager was a specific thing, but, yeah.
I mean, we have a Polish Pilsner. I mean, you know, I mean... all you gotta do is make it with regional ingredients, right? I mean, realistically,
yeah.
That's, you know, interesting. Very interesting.
Yeah. Huh. But no, I think the biggest trend is going to be people trying to steal milkshakes. So Phase 3 and more, I'm not really going to go into it, but they have a weird connection, so it makes sense as to why they basically make the same beer. But there's other breweries that I see that are just like, let me make this pineapple vanilla milkshake IPA real quick. It's just like, oh, okay. So people are just chasing each other's milkshakes, literally.
Gotcha.
Or there's a lot of breweries that are starting to copy Unsettled Art and Humble Forger, which, again, going back to Octopi, are both contracted at Octopi. And they both make fantastic products, but it's just really funny because 2 years ago, they were the only ones making, like, smoothie seltzers that were regionally widely available and smoothie IPAs and sours. And now it's like there's probably 7 or 8 different breweries on our shelf that do that kind of stuff.
Gotcha.
The trick is finding a way to make those thick, chunky styles without leaning hard into the milk sugar. Because it's technically not the sugar that makes it a milkshake,
it's
the puree.
Yeah, it's the thickness of the puree.
And the other adjuncts. Like, lactose, to my understanding, is just there to sweeten it up, too.
It adds some mouthfeel.
Yeah, which I hear is Hot Butcher's problem with it.
I can't speak to any of that. I know we are not a lactose brewery, mostly because it makes Tyler sick.
Yeah.
And it's not my preference. It doesn't mean it's right or wrong. Yeah. It's just not our preferences. Now, I mean, there have been beers we've made, well, we'd have to go back to the beginning, though, with some lactose. But, I mean, there was a reason for it, you know what I mean?
And
they're one-off special kind of things, yeah. You know what I mean?
I have no problem with lactose in beers. I just want it to be disclosed and style appropriate. Like milk stout, if you're making a milk stout without milk, you're not making a milk stout.
Yes, it better be in a milk stout. 110%. Yes.
But I just don't like it when I buy a 4-pack of beer and I enjoy it, and then I go to my lactose intolerant friends, and they're like, this is going to make me shit weird.
Right. Yeah, no, that's, I can't think of any better description than that. It makes my friend shit weird. Yeah. My friend's shitting like a raccoon, that's not good. Art over there, he's shitting like a deer. That's no good. We don't need that to happen, Dave. No. So Corey, since you're with us, I'm going to pull you in on this and say, you sell beer, Dave buys beer. So what do you see as interests that you see out there from other people, including maybe where Dave works or not, and how that, kind of bouncing that off of each other, like, you know what I mean? Because I mean, he's seen it going this way. What are your views?
I have people ask me all the time, when is this beer coming back out? When is that beer coming back out? I'll say a lot of it is right now, lighter beers.
Yeah.
Polish Pilsner, that people have already checked. I have people ask me all the time, when is that coming back out? And this isn't just like beer buyers. Like,
right. Consumers as well.
Consumers as well and everything. And even to get warmer out late night, I get asked at least twice a week.
So I will say,
coming back.
A funny, weird observation is Late Night Golf Car Ride, which is Late Night Golf Car Ride, which is one of our oatmeal stouts with coffee.
Which I would drink year-round.
I was just going to say that. I think the sales are almost stronger during the summer for that beer than the winter. Like when people are on the patio and it gets dark out, is a well-sought-after beer.
Have you ever made a beer float out of it?
Yes, we personally have. Yes.
That's probably my favorite McLean County made beer, floatable beer.
So we had an ice cream. One of the ice cream trucks come in. Gosh, it's probably back in year one, and they had the little individual servings, and we were able to sell a customer. They were able to sell them an individual cup of ice cream, and then we sold them a beer in the cup. It's kind of like a make your own float on the spot kind of thing.
Oh, yeah. That's fun.
Yeah.
I saw the 11% on this.
Oh, yeah.
I'm glad we shared the bottle.
Did you read the Abraxas?
11.5.
buddy. That's why they're sharing beers.
Yes. Oh, yeah. And that's why this one's just in a bomber, not a wine bottle.
Yeah. That works. 100%.
The other thing I've seen more demand for with accounts and everything in general is the hazy IPAs as we get the warmer out.
Yeah, I mean,
they have a natural fruity flavor. Yeah. I mean, all IPAs, to that matter, they have that natural fruit essence.
That's the other one I get asked at least once a week about when's King Corn coming back.
Well, I hope you didn't tell them soon, because it is going to be soon.
I'm just gonna start giving them Tyler's number.
Perfect.
Oh,
perfect.
Wow. Go ahead and try.
I don't have a voicemail.
100%. Here you go, sir. All right. Well, with that, I mean, I think we've had a pretty good tour. We've met the man, the myth and the legend, the ethos of Pizza Dave, and the complexities he brings to the table, from his days of slinging the pizzas to delivering the pizzas to his nowadays of connoisseuring as well as selling the beers. It's kind of like a kid coming of age, right? You know what I mean? But glad to have you. Love working with you. Love having you around here all the time. Looking forward to next steps.
Oh yeah,
sweet.
There's a lot of big steps in the near future. Hopefully sooner rather than later.
I love that, Dave.
More details to come.
I like that a lot. So with that note, thank you everybody. Look forward to seeing you next week. Cheers.
Cheers.